Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Fire Grand Strategies and Other Stuff from the Street with Anthony Avillo and Jim Duffy on Fire Engineering Talk Radio, where firefighters come to share their knowledge, their ideas, their opinions, and most of all, have a little bit of fun at the same time. So stay tuned and enjoy the show.
The funny thing about firemen, night and day, they're always firemen.
Hey, welcome to October's Fire Ground Strategies and Other Stuff from the Street on Fire Engineering Talk Radio, brought to you by Honeywell and DuPont, sponsors of the FDIC Scholarship Program. If you look in our chat room, you'll see a connection, or you look on Fire Ground Strategies Facebook page, you'll also see a connection how you can put in for a scholarship. Tonight's show is going to be a little bit unusual, number one, because my partner from New Jersey is not going to be here tonight. He's teaching at the academy. Number two, we're probably not going to talk too much about firefighting. We're going to talk about promotional and hiring processes. And most importantly, we're going to talk about one of the greatest mentors in the fire service, Alan Brunicini. As most of you probably know, that he passed away yesterday, so we'll be talking a little bit about him. Tonight we have Joe Pernesti and Brian Zatz with us, and we have somebody else calling in. So, Joe, why don't you introduce yourself, tell people who you are very, very briefly, who you are, where you work, and what your position is with fire service.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Duff. I really appreciate it. I'm Joe Pernesti. I'm an assistant fire chief with the city of Elyria, Ohio Fire Department, just west of Cleveland. I'm a shift commander. Our department's about 65 guys and a pretty active department. And I love to write and pass along my passion. Like you, Duff, you're my mentor. So thanks again.
Easy. We also have Brian Zatz with us. Brian, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a captain on a truck in Metro West out in St. Louis County, Missouri, suburban fire department located right outside of St. Louis, St. Louis City. We're actually in St. Louis County. Been here about just under 17 years. So same thing, just anytime I get a chance to talk about the fire service and a job I absolutely love, I'll take advantage of it. And when you get to talk to guys like yourselves, it's always a good thing. So appreciate the time tonight.
Awesome. I have one question for you, as long as I got you on the line. I'll be teaching at Missouri University, their winter fire school this year. You going to come by and say hello and have a coffee or a beer with me?
Yeah, I'm going to try to. I'll try to get up there. It's always a good time. You'll definitely enjoy yourself.
Good, good. I have a couple of new callers, and I'm going to find out who they are before we move on. Who do we have on the line here that just called in? Okay, I guess he's gone. I got one more.
Mike Lloyd from Nebraska.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good, brother. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. I don't know if you've just been listening to the show. Why don't you introduce yourself, tell the folks listening who you are, and a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm Mike Lloyd. I'm in Nebraska. I'm the fire chief at a small city, York, Nebraska. We're a combination department. We have 14 full-time staff, about 40 volunteers. I'm married, got four kids, and go crazy most of the time. So just glad to be on. And I did hear your small part of your tribute to Chief Brunicini, who has probably impacted more firefighters than anybody in history. And his passing is a great loss to the organization as a whole.
Incredible loss. But before we get on to Chief Brunicini, a couple things I want to just speak about. The hurricanes in Puerto Rico, Florida, and Texas. Number one, the firefighters stepped up and did an absolutely incredible job. People on the USAR teams, from all over the country and all over the world helping in all those places. Also, the folks that live there, you're in my thoughts and prayers, and I think most of the world's thoughts and prayers. I know a lot of you are still struggling, especially in Puerto Rico. There are areas that they don't expect to see power there for months in Puerto Rico. I know Texas is getting back together and Florida's getting back together. But because, logistically, because of how Puerto Rico's set up and being an island, it's been a little more difficult for them. Not because of lack of effort. I know sent plenty of resources there, but it's just a very, very difficult situation. I know there are a lot of people out there looking for donations and funds. Just check your charities carefully. Make sure they're delivering the service to the people that need it. And to the brother firefighters in Houston who've lost their homes and the rest of Texas, you know, hang tough. Now, Alan Bruner Sr.
Chief Duffy, I'd also like to say something about California. Those guys out there facing those wildfires.
Oh.
You know, same sentiments. You know, we got a lot of firefighters out on the California coast that have lost their houses due to the wildland fires out there and are working endless, countless hours on the line trying to save people's property and lives. So, again, you know, those guys are in our thoughts and prayers. It seems like our country's kind of crazy right now with all the stuff going on. But, you know, if you're not affected by it, try to give if you can, because it's definitely needed.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for setting me straight. Sorry I missed them, but yes, absolutely. My brother lives out there. Right now, all the fires in his area have been contained, so he's doing real well. But, yeah, oh, my God, those guys are working days and days on end. And, you know, while they're protecting other people, they are losing their homes. Yeah, absolutely. And, obviously, of course, the people in Las Vegas, too. Some great heroism shown there by firefighters, police, and everyday citizens. So, again, like you said, thoughts and prayers, and if you can give, please do. Alan Brunicini, I'm going to ask you guys some questions about the first time you heard about it, the first book, but in a minute. But I want to read something that Bill Dustin said on the Fire Engineering Post about Brunicini passing. Just a cut of one sentence, and it's something that always struck me about Bruno. He said, Brunicini set an example for all of us by constantly reminding us of why we are here. In his words, we are here for Mrs. Smith. Mrs. Smith represented a person who had a problem, sometimes not a fire or a fire-related problem, but they had no one else to turn to but the fire department. And one of the things she reminded us was to be patient with these people. You know, we have the frequent flyers. If you do EMS, you understand it. But they're people with real problems. One of the areas where we're starting to lose our compassion that I see is because of the opioid crisis. Nobody woke up and said, I'm going to be a junkie today. These have become our frequent flyers. And we need to treat them with the same compassion we treat everybody else. On my job, we've gotten letters from reformed junkies that we've brought back from the dead, a mother of a junkie who died or an opioid user of an overdose. The mother called us and thanked us for treating her with compassion and her son with dignity while he died in her home. So you know what? All these people are somebody's son, daughter, mother, brother, sister, something. And it all goes back to what Alan always said. We're here for Mrs. Smith. And we need to remember that. I know it's hard when we get the repeat customers and what people call the BS calls. But Alan Brunicini always talked about serving the public, specifically Mrs. Smith. The book that Alan wrote that read the most, meant the most to me was The Essentials of the Fire Department and Customer Service. It revolves all around everything I just spoke about. I'd like to ask each of you one at a time, and I'm going to start with Joe. What was the first book that you read or your first exposure to Chief Brunicini?
Well, I would say that it was a controversial one. We had a boss back in the late 80s when I first came on that had read Fire Command. And we were a typical, North Midwest apartment that, didn't want to change. And all of a sudden, my boss started sitting in his car, and he was commanding from the car. And we couldn't figure out why he was doing this. And it caused a lot of issues and controversy, and he just didn't want to get wet, or he didn't want to wanted to stay dry, blah, blah, blah. So I asked him one day, and he gave me the book Fire Command. And, I'm a young fireman, didn't make much sense to me. And we, trials and tribulations through all this. And then about 5 years later, I get promoted to lieutenant. I have to read this book for a promotional. And then I went to a conference where Bruno spoke, and it all kind of came together. And since then, that was probably 94, I was hooked. And he's an icon, and he's going to be missed. And I worry that there's a lot of young members of the service who aren't going to know who Brunacini is. And it's up to guys like us to continue his legacy and to never allow his name to be forgotten in the fire service or what he stood for. So we have big shoes to fill, but I know we can do it. But that was my first, who is this guy trying to, this Phoenix way and sitting in his car and stationary command posts and all this stuff. And today I wouldn't leave my stationary command post if my pants were on fire. So it's just amazing what he's done for the service and for me.
I have to ask you a question just to close that out. Do you sit in your car, or you just have a stationary command post?
I stay in my car.
You do?
My head would explode if I had to
sit in my car.
unless I cannot get a good look at anything, I stay in my vehicle, and I won't go any other way now. That's just the way it is.
That's me. Good for you. We do keep a relatively stationary command post on the A side of the building, typically, but I stand in front of the building. And again, I'm an old guy, so although our department doesn't do the car, the command post from the car. Interesting. Maybe we'll get back to that. All right, Brian, I'm going to go to you. What was your first influence or book that you read by Chief Brunacini?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I read the book that essentially the fire department and customer service. I was going through a promotion at the time, and that was kind of the big buzzword is, they're customers, not patients, and they're, these are people. It's kind of the first time I heard that in the fire service, so it's kind of interesting. But it's so true, like you said, whether it's an opiate, a heroin overdose, or whatever, we're seeing people on their worst day, and while most of us would rather go pull a line or pull ceiling. That the reality is that we're much more than that as a fire service. And I think Chief Brunacini epitomized that with his philosophy of I always remember the story of, if you see a flat tire, there's not going to be a fire truck pulling by it. And Phoenix Fire Department, they're going to stop and they're going to assist with that flat tire. Because, it was kind of the thought, and I continue to this day, is that, you're either going to be the fire department or you're going to be their fire department. And I think that's really the message he was getting out there is, we're going to be there for whatever they need to serve the citizens of Phoenix and for all of us in the fire service is what we're supposed to do. Chief Pernesti, it's interesting you say that about the young firefighters. I got a guy currently working with me, and it's been a fall. I can't believe that this occurred, but he's been on the job 3 years. And I said, hey, did you see Chief Brunacini died yesterday? And he goes, well, who's that? And I'm like, hold on. We stopped everything. And we had a little, it was not bad, but he just has an exposure to it. There's so many people in the fire service nowadays. He didn't know. And so I showed him some videos and some different things with him and a couple of books we have at the station. And I said, this is what he's done. And I took him over and I said, hey, all the blue car stuff we're doing, that's him. That's the stuff he did. And so he was pretty impressed. And like you guys say, a true legend, the fire service is passed on, unfortunately. But to your point, it's our job to keep his vision of what we should be doing alive and well. So.
It's actually our job to do that, like you said. I'll tell you an interesting story. It's not about Bunesini, but in my class, I always show a picture of Frank Brannigan and his book. And last year at FDIC, there was nobody in my class that knew who Frank Brannigan was. And if you're thinking building construction, I know Joe does this all the time because of the type of buildings he has in his district. The building is your enemy, and people, they're not using that textbook in a lot of fire schools now, unless you're getting into the upper level stuff, you know, fire marshal type stuff, fire officer at the higher level, command level. But we can't forget people like these, because that's our foundation. That's why we're where we are today. And I think that's really important that we keep their legacy going. I'm still stunned about this. I know it's been a little over a day, but my God, that surprised the heck out of me. Mr. Lloyd, or
yeah.
Chief Lloyd, I apologize. Tell me your first exposure.
My first exposure was fire command. And it was having started out in the wildland world, where we were already kind of doing a lot of incident command, where Chief Brunicini brought it back to a level that made sense for the structural firefighting world. And then it kind of exploded since then. But I would say the book that had the greatest impact on me personally and on my career was Essentials of Customer Service. It gave me a different outlook on the people we're serving. And that book, you know, the phrase Mrs. Smith, you always know who's read that book when they start talking about Mrs. Smith. So that book probably had the greatest impact on me. And it definitely shapes how I approach my day-to-day in my office, or when I'm on the streets, or when I'm presenting to a group, whatever I'm doing. It definitely makes a difference to me. But I got to tell you, since we're all sharing little stories here, I had the opportunity, the first time I had the opportunity to meet Chief Brunicini was at the leadership conference that was named in his honor. That in the initial years, it was at Notre Dame. I got to go to Notre Dame, which for me is like the Holy Grail. And B, I got to meet Chief Brunicini. And I thanked him for being a mentor of mine, even though we had never met. And here's how humble he was about it. He goes, "Did either one of us learn anything along the way?" And I was just kind of blown away by his humbleness and just how he treated everybody from top to bottom, just fantastic. And I don't know if anybody has a bad word to say about him. The Nebraska Chiefs had Chief Brunicini out last spring for our leadership presentation, and he just wowed people. And he takes it from this where you could make it more complex than it really is, and he just breaks it down. Be nice. Treat people right. You know, that's how do you get any, I mean, it's not any more complicated than that, at least in my opinion.
Agree 100%. Have any of you ever read Phoenix's mission statement?
Yeah, I
have. Let me tell you, in a nutshell, we all have, you know, we tried to write mission statements, although I was not involved in it. You know, make this big, wordy thing. Here's the mission statement in a nutshell. Prevent harm, survive, go home, and be nice. You know, I think it's a great philosophy. Keep it simple, stupid. And going back to what Brian said earlier about passing somebody with a flat, and I may sound like I'm whining, but I think we're losing a little bit of that. Our firefighters want to fight big fires and go to cardiac arrest, but they whine when they do what they call BS calls. You know, Mrs. Smith has knee pain, or it turns out Mrs. Smith is really lonely and she likes when the fire department comes and checks up on her. And they're becoming increasingly, and I'm not saying in my department, although it does happen with people in my department, but as I travel, I'm hearing this from a lot of officers, that firefighters don't want to go to the bat in the house call, the cat in the tree, I locked my keys in the car, the knee pain or the lower back pain. Well, I'm a paramedic, I train to save lives, not transport people with knee pain. And I'm hearing this consistently around the country, and it's scaring me because I'm wondering where the future is. When you go to a place like FDIC, you meet the people who are really into the job and don't believe that. But in the trenches throughout the country, I don't want to put a label on it, but some of the newer folks are not that into just plain helping people like Bruno was preaching. Do you guys see that in your departments or in some individuals in your department?
Oh, I do. Absolutely. I do. I work in a very poor community and the people have nothing, and it can get a little depressing, but when our younger guys can have that, sometimes in all of us, that compassion just isn't there. And so, yeah, I see it. I see it a lot that you have to kind of remind them or kind of guide them to do the right thing and to be nice.
We're seeing it as well. I understand it, though, to a certain degree. I mean, there's a lot of frustration. You train a lot. I mean, and you look at all the stuff that we're required to do. I mean, my department's cross trained as paramedics and firefighters, as well as rescue techs and hazmat techs, and we're all doing it. I mean, we're not unique in where I'm at. We're all doing that stuff, and the call volume for those type of calls is low. So when you require that level of training, and then the level of training that you're trained to is not being utilized, I think it's just human nature. That being said, it's not right. I'm not trying to defend their actions. I agree completely. For the most part, you get them, you sit them down, you talk to them, or you try to just, if one guy can just get on the call and say, hey, this is another human being. You know, we're seeing this person that they're potentially, albeit knee pain, this is the worst day they're having. You know, this, and I like to tell guys this too, this is the worst call you're on today. So if somebody have a knee pain, it's a pretty simple call. I mean, get them on a stretcher, hold their hand, take them to the hospital, and you're with them for 15 or 20 minutes. You know, it doesn't take that long to be nice to Chief Bernstein's part. If you're just nice, it's not that hard, so.
Yeah, I agree. It's actually easier sometimes. You know what? If I think back on my career, I've been to some horrible fatal accidents and go on and on and on about this. But a call I remember the most is I'm working on the ambulance, and this elderly woman, little dementia, she peed on my shoes, we put her in the ambulance, we brought her to the hospital, and when we got there, she just looked at me and said, thank you, the first person that's paid attention to me, I think, in years. And basically all I did was smile at her, hold her hand like you said, and just acknowledge her complaint or her difficulties. I don't remember what the call was for, but she thanked me for paying attention to her. How difficult it is to look somebody in the eye and just say, yes, ma'am, we're going to get you to the hospital. We're going to do what we, even though, no paramedic interventions were needed. It was just transported to the hospital. And apparently her family didn't pay attention to her. Nobody visited her. She had complaints and, her nurse's age is like, yeah, I'm going to watch TV. So, you know what? You do have a chance to make an impact on Mrs. Smith every single day that you work as a firefighter. And I believe it's easier to just do that than bitch about it. Smile at her, take her to the hospital or him or whatever the case may be. Mike, I know you're new in your job. Have you seen any of that in your new roost over there?
Absolutely. We're like many departments, we're an ALS ambulance service that goes to the occasional fire. And we cover a lot of square miles as our ambulance service, more than we do as our fire service. But I've had to remind the guys, you know, that those people just want, sometimes they just want somebody to be nice to them. Because I know if I, on the calls that I go to, if I just kind of, especially if it's an old, an elderly lady, I might flirt with her a little bit and talk nice to her. And boy, you just see the smile on her face and you know that you're making a difference. Is there a situation, in my opinion, a horrible critical situation? Probably not. But for them at that moment, they needed somebody and we were the ones that were there to help them. And it's, I have to, you know, when you only have four people on a shift and we're running, you know, out of one station, we're running, we're on track for like 1,500 calls this year. Well, that doesn't sound like a lot for a lot of places, but we're doing patient transfers from, you know, that are 3-hour round trips and 4 and 5 hour round trips on these patient transfers that we do. And they spend a lot of time in the back of the bus with these patients. Some of them are, you know, critical cardiac conditions, and some of them are, you know, not so critical. And just to remind guys that just because it's inconvenient or it's not at, you don't think it's important, the doctors apparently think it is important, and that's what we're here for. I have tried to institute a little bit more of the, you know, taking care of the Mrs. Smiths. If you see somebody who needs help on the side of the road, stop and help them. You know, obviously you would never do that when you got a critical patient in the back. But on the same note, I've, and I don't have a young department. Most of my guys, my youngest guy is, I think, 29, and the next youngest guy is 45. And so, you know, we just don't have that. And so when I look to the future, I'm looking for people that are going to bring a fresh attitude that, and hopefully that we doesn't get squashed, you know, so that we can just build on helping people on their worst day, making their worst day our best day.
Awesome. I just have to tell you to be careful with the flirting. You know, you're going to end up getting in trouble for sexual harassment. You know, it's like, you know, be careful with that stuff.
Oh, come on now, Doc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know what? You never know today. It's a crazy world we live in.
I don't mean sexual flirting. I just say nice things smile at them and just be, you know, extra nice to them, as if I would be to my own grandmother.
Nice recovery there, Chief.
Well, I didn't become Chief because I was dense, you know.
I don't know. You guys have any other thoughts on the subject before we move on?
No, I think the one thing that Chief Bruno mentioned that I use today in my classes and to my firefighters is that he went up to a young paramedic in Phoenix, and he said, "What happens if I were to take a 45 and shoot somebody in the head?" And they said, "Well, that person's going to die." And he goes, "Okay, you need to learn when the building is shot in the head." And that is something that I constantly, that is the analogy, my go-to analogy, to teach people how to know when the building is shot in the head. And so that's my, I got tons of them, all of us do, but he taught me a lot, and I appreciate everything he did for the fire service.
Yeah, he'll be sorely missed. His motivation and enthusiasm right up until last week, I'm sure, was immeasurable. You know, we all have our lulls, but if you look at him, he lived, ate, and bled the fire service his entire life. And I'd like to see some of that come back, and I know we're human beings, like Brian said earlier, we go up and down with our motivation level. And his books are out there. We need to share them with other people because he's not going to be out there making the rounds and teaching anymore. But his videos and books and his articles are everywhere. And in a short future, I'm sure they're going to be all over the internet, and they're going to be everywhere. But a year from now or 2 years from now, we got to try to keep that spirit going. Brian, any closing on Chief Bonacini before we move on?
No, I think it's good. I think, like you said, everything's going to be out there. I think read it all, but more importantly than just reading it and understanding it, you know, sharing it and living it so that, you know, his legacy truly lives on, not just remembered on.
Hey, Doc.
Yeah, I agree. Yes, sir.
The other thing is that we can do as leaders within our organizations or leaders in our communities and or the greater fire service is to model those behaviors that he believed in and preached to us.
I agree. I agree. I've witnessed some things by some of my officers, not specifically on my shift, so I'm kind of washing my hands a little bit, that after the fire was out, they were ready to just to pick up and go home, where we could have done, and we did, in fact, stay and take care of some things before we moved on. When did it become, my question was, when did it become okay to leave a place in shambles when we could do a little more to help the occupants? And, you know, this person realized his transgression and we moved on, but we have to continually reinforce that taking care, and I'm going to say it, Mrs. Smith is a huge part of our job. That's more important sometimes than the medical care or putting out the fire, because you may go to a fire once a week, once a day, once a year, or whatever it is, but these people, it's the only time they've ever experienced a fire. It's the only time they've ever needed a paramedic. And us being compassionate and caring is the truest tradition of a fire service, and we need to remember that. And I believe that, but sometimes you forget to reinforce it. But with the death of Alan Brunacini, I'm going to make sure that's at the top of my leadership style as I go forward from here. Before we move on to the next subject, I'm going to talk a little bit about FDIC. You folks that have never been, it's an incredible experience. I know everybody that I'm talking to on the radio here has been to FDIC. And Honeywell and DuPont are offering a chance for you to go full boat. That includes airfare, hotel, and tuition, and a few nights meals as well. So go to Honeywell DuPont, FDICscholarship.com, and enter yourself or enter somebody else. I think it's well worth it to go. We were just talking about Alan Brunacini a minute ago. One of the things that I learned from being an instructor and or going to FDIC is that we shouldn't be intimidated by our heroes. And many people that teach at FDIC today and in the past were my heroes. They were people I read and listened to and gone to conferences. We shouldn't be intimidated by them. We should be inspired by them. And I truly mean that. I still go every year. I'm less intimidated by some of these people. But some of these people, when I first started going, I was afraid to talk to. But every one of them, just like Joe said about Alan Brunacini, they want to talk to you. They want to get to know you. And they're not fearsome animals. They're truly caring firefighters that want to share their knowledge with you. So if you're listening, think about going to FDIC and applying for the scholarship. Brian, you have a class in FDIC this year?
I do. I'm doing a class of company officer development. Yeah, I'm here. Class of company officer development called Bridging the Gap. It's everything you didn't learn in Fire Officer 1 and 2, and it's quite a bit of stuff. So, you know, just things I've learned over the years of being a company officer, ideas. We're going to talk about leadership. We're going to talk about fire stations, company training, strategy and tactics for the fire ground. It's very interactive. So it should be a good time. Looking forward to I think people get intimidated at FDIC. You're more of a facilitator up there. You know, you want to a lot of knowledge in those rooms, and you can leverage that knowledge if you do it right. So I'm going to try my best to make that happen again this year. So looking forward to it.
Awesome. Do you know what day you're teaching yet, or that hasn't come out yet?
Yeah, I'm doing a Monday morning, 8 to 10, 8 to noon. So first thing Monday morning, everybody's bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and it's the best time.
That's the same. That's the same day as my class. I hate you. I'm eventually going to go to one of your classes.
It's every time they put us together.
Yeah. Joe, how about you?
Well, let me first say that my class is Monday morning at 8 a.m. And so I guess if anybody listening, if you've already been to the other guys' classes, you can come to mine, or we could all just go in one big room. But my class is called Lost in the Fog of the Fireground, and it's based on a personal experience I had where I almost killed two of my guys, and I look at things where, you know, we get lost kind of like you've heard Lost in the Fog of War. Well, we try to look at ways we can clear the fog of the fire ground and see things clear as a company officer or commander.
Cool, cool, cool. Mike, I know you didn't get picked up this year. You shared that. But maybe you can do a class next year on the new fire chief taking over a new department. What do you think?
I think that would be great. And I've been keeping a journal of my first year, and the pages are getting filled up quicker than I can say. But we're talking about conferences, and FDIC is a wonderful, great conference, and I can't deny that. I enjoy every time I'm there, and I meet new people and make new friends and rebuild and strengthen relationships. And, you know, we do have this little conference in Nebraska, you know, that's coming up, and we haven't really started announcing too much yet. But my brother Joe Pernesky is going to be there this year and presenting a great class. And Jim, you've been there a few times. We're really getting excited about as we're coming together on that. So the Les Luker Winter Conference in February, first weekend of February. So we'd love to have a lot of people come. Just throwing that out there, my little marketing time.
You know what? That's quite all right, because this show and all the fire engine shows are about sharing the knowledge. And I know that's been the theme at Les Luker for a long time, share the knowledge. And I kind of coined it as the best little fire conference in Middle America. I enjoyed my time there. I enjoyed the students. And learned a lot through osmosis. Unfortunately, one thing I don't like about Les Luker is that I'm teaching the whole time I'm there, and I don't get to go to anybody else's classes. But in the evenings, I sit and talk with every instructor that you have there, and almost every student that's been in my classes, great people. So I highly recommend this if you're in Nebraska, Colorado, or anywhere nearby. It's worth your trip. We even had people from Tennessee there one year.
Well, they've been back every year since. So we've had a group, little contingent from Tennessee every year. And it's really a fun conference, I think. You know, even though that I'm usually pretty involved in the administration side of it, that, yes, in the evening we get the opportunity to kind of relax and kick our shoes off and visit with everybody. It's kind of we've kind of built it as an FDIC on steroids, where people who go see an hour and 45-minute class or an hour and a half class at FDIC, they get to come to our conference to get a 4-hour class from many of the same instructors. So,
well, there you go. Just hold on 1 second. Yeah, I Jim Duffy here. Who do we have that just called in?
Steve Hamilton.
Steve Hamilton, how you doing? Welcome aboard. Good.
Sorry,
to hear
we
from
had
you.
A run.
Listen, that's okay. You got to earn your pay sometime. I know, you know, being a federal guy, that's, you know, not that important. Listen.
Hey, Doug, sorry, be nice now.
Yes, sir.
Be nice. I'm a federal guy, so be nice.
That's okay. Steve, we were just about to move on to succession planning and promotional stuff, but we just spent the first hour here talking about Chief Brunicini. And the question was, what was your first exposure to him or your first book and your thoughts of Chief Brunicini in general? So we'll start with your first exposure.
It was at a seminar at the South Carolina Fire Academy, I believe, in around 2004, 2005. He came to speak, and it was kind of, I was taken aback at first because he was dressed in a Hawaiian shirt, which I thought was interesting, and he sat on the edge of the stage and just talked to people, like somebody just sitting around a table. He was very relaxed and very humbling with his presence. And I remember he and I discussing hazmat in particular and level A suits and things like that. And he was very open to my question and my thought, which I thought was great. And then I had dealings with him 10 years later through FDIC and ISFSI and setting up some special functions at FDIC. And he remembered me and he remembered my question because it was a pretty unique one. But I was always in awe of his presence because he listened to everybody. If you saw him in a restaurant, he was very engaged with the waitress, the people around him. He was just a really good listener. And he was a very engaged conversationalist. And it didn't matter who you were, what walk of life you came from, or what you did, he cared about anything you were going to say. And that was, for someone of his stature and for his presence and what he did to the fire service for the last 60-some-odd years, I'm in awe of it. I was in complete awe of it, for somebody to be so humble.
Great observation. That was great. Steve, I didn't do this, but why don't you quickly introduce yourself in case some of our listeners don't know who you are, where you work, what you do, and the like.
I'm Steve Hamilton. I'm a lieutenant with the Fort Jackson Fire Department, which Fort Jackson is the largest Army basic training installation in the country. So I work for the federal government. Typically ride either a rescue or a ladder company. It kind of ebb and flow a little bit. But I'm also a senior reserve deputy with the Richland County Sheriff's Department. I just hit my 7-year mark last month. I've been here at Fort Jackson for over 15 years, and I've been in the fire service since 1996. I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. That's what it boils down to.
Hey, I'm almost 62 years old, and I still don't know what I want to be growing up. So that's actually a good thing. I'm going to give you kudos on that. Steve, quick rundown of what you're doing at FDIC, and then we're going to move on to succession planning.
I teach responding to and preparing for acts of violence. Excuse me. For the last 5 or 6 years at FDIC, the class centers on all aspects of violent scene response, from a shooting or a domestic or a fight, all the way through complex coordinated attacks and terrorism. And we discuss historical events, what they mean and why they're important for us to remember them, the lessons learned. And then we kind of touch broad based on what you need to know or what you need to do to prepare for those types of events in your jurisdiction. So we cover everything from volunteer departments with a small firefighting force and a small law enforcement force, all the way through large metropolitan departments. We talk about intelligence. We talk about active shooter, IED attacks, improvised incendiary devices, things like that. and we dive into it, and we get pretty in depth. It's a good class. It's a 4-hour workshop.
Cool.
And I believe I'm teaching Monday afternoon this year, or Monday morning. I'm teaching Monday morning.
Are you? Please don't tell me it's Monday morning.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay, well, right now there are 4 people on this group that are teaching Monday morning. So I thought that's very, very interesting.
But I have really good videos that showing stuff getting blown up.
That's okay. moving right along, as I travel around the country, one of the things I've noticed talking to fire officers, firefighters, and fire chiefs is that there appears to be a problem in the fire service about succession planning. The number one complaint is that departments don't train their replacements. Fire chiefs don't train their replacements. Lieutenants may on a day-to-day basis try to train their firefighters to become lieutenants or work as acting lieutenants. It's a definite failure on our part, and I think we need to do a better job. My department, and some of my opinion is, if you want to be a lieutenant, go out and study for it, work for it, learn your job, go to seminars, go to conferences, go to May Day seminars, go to hands-on training. But it's also the responsibility of the fire department to give them some guidance what they expect a lieutenant to be or to know when they become a lieutenant. We don't have a roadmap to become a lieutenant or to become a captain or to become a battalion chief or even become a deputy chief. Some of that onus is on the candidate themselves. What we do have that many departments don't have, we have a very detailed job description that helps give them some guidance. I'll just give you a quick sample. Thorough knowledge of methods used in combating, extinguishing, and preventing fires. Thorough knowledge, methods for managing hazardous materials incidents, and the like. We have a list of a minimum not less than 4 years as a career firefighter in the Wellington Fire Department, to be a battalion chief not less than 2 years in the previous rank, things like that. We have a little bit of requirements like fire officer one, fire instructor one, things like that. But after that, it's up to the wannabe lieutenant or the wannabe captain or the wannabe battalion chief to go out and get the knowledge, figure it out on his own. Or if they have a good relationship with the chief, they can go in and sit down and, hey, can you give me some ideas? But we don't have a formal line for them to follow. Joe and I were talking earlier. In New Jersey, there's a state test. If you want to be a captain, because they don't have lieutenants in New Jersey, if you want to be a captain in New Jersey, you take a state test. And it's like a civil service test. And then the highest ranking person on that test, the particular department, can hire them. I personally am confused by that because I work in a department that has less than 100 guys in it. We have 3-man engines. But the next town over has 8 engines, 2 trucks, and 4-man on a truck. So their SOPs and policies would be different than mine. So that's where I have issues with this state-type test. But I think we as individual fire departments and we as a service, the fire department needs to better prepare the people that are going to move up in the ranks. I'm going to start this backwards from the way we started before. So new fire chief, Chief Lloyd, I know you're in the process of maybe hiring one and promoting one. Have you come up with a plan how you're going to do this? Or even before that, have you come up with an idea how to prepare people for future promotions?
Well, the answer to all of that is yes.
I've already begun doing some mentoring because I believe mentoring is something that we all need to do. And so the guys that are interested in hearing what I have to say and what my vision of our organization is and where our organization needs to be and where we need to progress to, I share that with those people. Now, as far as testing goes and promotion goes, part of my program is dictated by statute and state statute that we have to do a test. So now this is a secret. Don't share this with anybody. Don't tell anybody what I'm saying here. Can we all agree to keep this a little bit of a secret?
It's not going to work.
Oh, damn. But anyway, we're going to do it.
Don't betray any confidences.
Yeah. Just keep it between us, guys, all right? But we're going to do a written test, and then we're going to do an assessment center after the written test. And then because I have to do a written test by statute, but I don't know that a promotion to a captain, and in my organization, a captain is a shift supervisor, but they're also riding the engine or riding an ambulance, that I don't think a written test really captures what I'm really looking for, because I'm looking for that person that's going to be able to speak in public, is going to have the confidence to share what they have, and that they're going to have the desire to move forward. Now, I just rewrote job descriptions because my job descriptions were written in 1994. So I rewrote job descriptions from my own job description all the way down to my firefighter EMT. And thankfully, I can put, you kind of plagiarize and take what other people have already done and make them your own. And then I shared with the guys that, okay, these are your new job descriptions. This is what it is. This is what you need to do to progress. And these are the educational requirements. This is the certification requirements. And now knowing that I can't hold them to an associate's degree, even though that the previous job description said that they had to have an associate's degree, but it had never been adhered to. So I have to give them some time. If I promote them, they're going to have time to do that. And I got to make that available to them and help them. And I've been able to talk to the guys that are the most interested in promoting and saying, look, this is where you can do it. You don't have to go to school. You can do everything online now. Just pick a good one to do. And if you want some help with those choices, I'm here to help you with those. And I got to be careful. I don't show favoritism, of course, as a chief. You got to be real careful about that. But, I have a vision of where the organization needs to go. I came from a highly structured federal installation. I worked at Offutt Air Force Base. I worked for the Air Force, the Army, the Defense Logistics Agency, the Navy, and Cal Fire. And so all highly structured organizations came into one that this is no secret to my guys. It's been kind of laissez-faire for a long time, and trying to trying to bring some of my order that I from my background to it, and trying to maintain balance in that. Of course, you meet resistance anytime you bring change, because the two things that every firefighter hates, is the way things are and change. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. Is that what kind of what you're asking, Duff? I kind of went off on a tangent there.
Absolutely what I'm asking, but I have one question to dig a little deeper. You said you were giving guidance to people that showed they were interested. Are you reaching out to people that aren't shown they're interested, that exhibit some talent for a possible leadership position?
Absolutely, I am. And because I've got it. Well, here's the crazy thing about Nebraska statute, because of we're a Class 1 city in the state of Nebraska. Well, my positions, I have to advertise them out to the open, to the public. And so
I understand that.
I could get applicants from anywhere for a promotional position. So I'm looking within the organization. I really want to do my promotions from within, because I don't want to have to deal with bringing somebody into that leadership role at that mid-level of the organization that's going to have to overcome a lot of the troubles there. So when I look around and I go, wow, this guy has potential. And so I talk to them and I say, hey, what are you thinking about this? And you know, nobody wants to tip their hand on what they're thinking they want to do. You know, they don't want to be criticized by their peers that they want to promote, you know, but so I share information with them. I have a talk with them. And I don't do these talks in private. The door of my office is never closed unless it happens
to
be. So, you know, yes. Or I'll catch them, I'll eat lunch with them and I'll talk to them and kind of share my ideas and kind of try to direct stuff at the people that I see potential in. And even the ones that
awesome.
I may not necessarily see potential in, but I know there's something there, I share with them too. And Tim, you know I'm a social guy, so I'm going to talk to anybody to listen.
Just like me. Do you know who said that quote you gave about two things firefighters hate? That was Alan Brunicini that said that. Firefighters hate change, and when they stay the same. That was Alan Brunicini that said that.
I know, and I thought it was appropriate to throw that one in there then. So
awesome. Brian, I know you're mid-level, so you're a perfect person to have this conversation with because you're the first-level supervisor. Did they offer you a roadmap to get to the position you currently hold?
So, you know, I would say there's a good defined job description in our policy manuals for all our officer positions, lieutenant, captain, battalion chief. Once you get above level battalion chief, those are kind of appointed positions by the chief. And that probably holds true to most organizations, I think, other than maybe your larger cities. For me, there's prerequisites, but, I always tell people when they're trying to get promoted, you know, the prerequisites are the absolute minimums that you have to have. So, you know, when guys come to me and they say, hey, you know, hey, Cap, I think I'm promoting up to lieutenant, or, you know, I got a lieutenant that's trying to go to captain, I say, hey, take a look at the job description and then identify classes and trainings that'll benefit you with those job description skill sets. Examples, you know, education and things like that. You know, if you're going to go get your education, you know, everybody can get the fire associates, and those are great classes. But, you know, I was telling people, like, you know, 100% of what we do, and to Brunicini's point, is dealing with people. So, you know, for myself, I went and got a master's in human resources and human resource development, because that's really my passion, is to train and educate and try to enlighten people. And, you know, when that was in the job description for, you know, I was in captain, it says, hey, being able to interact with people, communicate on a daily basis, you know, up and down the chain of command, those sort of things. I think there's an onus on people to succession planning. You know, within my organization, you know, there's a plan in place that's kind of being executed currently to kind of get people in the correct spots where we need to be as we move this organization forward. And that's great. You know, there's a lot of opportunities out there. There's a lot of stuff out there guys can take, the EFO programs, the Managing Company Officer program, you know, the educational aspects, the trainings, the FDICs. I wouldn't discount anything. Anything you can do to make yourself a little bit better each day, I think, is a benefit. There's a lot of good reads out there. There's a brand new succession management kind of book, if you will, online book, an e-book, the company officer section that IFC just put out. And so that's a pretty good read if you're looking for something that's kind of a roadmap on how to start up a succession plan in your organization. You know, it just came out in August. And that's a pretty good tool that really, for the most part, hasn't been there. It's Succession Management for the Fire Rescue Services, Understanding and Applying the Process. And it was written by basically a bunch of company officers. And, you know, they kind of did a detailed analysis of it. And, you know, it was written through the IFC, so it was vetted through the IFC. And it's available online. I think it's like $5. It's, you know, it's an e-version, so it's pretty inexpensive. But I would, you know, highly recommend that as a good read. If you're kind of looking at your organization saying, hey, I need to, you know, the chief voice point, hey, I'm a new chief, I need something to kind of get myself started. You know, $5 out of your own pocket is nothing in today's world. So, but there's a lot of those resources out there, you know. But I think to your point, Chief Duffy, is that, you know, clear expectations of what those positions entail and then clear expectations of what you're expecting those guys to attain prior to, you know, Chief Lawyer talking about, you know, the associate's degree and, well, I got to give them time and that sort of stuff. You know, the issue that I kind of have with some of that stuff and it is when your guys are already, you know, when you promote somebody and they don't have everything, you're kind of setting them up behind the eight ball. You know, you really want them to go into that position, start it high, and then to continue to excel. And so, you know, if the guys aren't capable of doing that, and I'm not saying you can't, but you kind of got to be careful of those things. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know what your guys' thoughts on those kind of things are.
Brian, I agree with you.
Brian?
But on the same, I don't want to handicap guys just because they didn't know what the expectation was prior to my arrival and after my arrival. I have some good people that I really think could make great company officers, and I got to give them that opportunity. And when you, if I handcuff them and say, you can only do this if you've already met all of these things, that means I have to promote from outside.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay. Oh, fair enough. Like I said, I just you want to make sure you're
in your job description, Mike. Can you put in must have served 4 years with? And I don't even know the name of your department anymore, and I apologize for that. But must have completed 4 years or 2 years with your department. You know, if you can get that into a future job description through your personnel department, that might help avoid that thing. Brian, what's your testing process?
So currently we test for all positions, like I said, up through battalion chief. So lieutenant test is the first initial officer test, if you will. We call it the Iditarod. Because it's pretty arduous. So you take a written test like everybody probably takes. Upon completion of that, there's an assessment center. So there's five skill sets that two are drawn at random, tabletop, in-out basket, presentation of some nature, public interaction, something. And then so one of those, two of those five are taken. And then the third step in that process is a live fire at our tower, which is graded from internal and external evaluators. We put you through a scenario at the tower where you're the officer of the company and you arrive in sequential order, however we determine it, to a event at the tower, and you have to make decisions. And then those are skilled sheets that we have filled out that are pre-drawn. And then the final, the fourth is obviously an interview. So we have an oral interview. Promotion to captain, similar process. We do a tabletop scenario.
Let me stop you there. Now, they're ranked. So say they're ranked as a lieutenant. Do they have to take number one candidate, or can they? Oh, they have to take number one.
No, it's kind of up to the chief's discretion. He'll be presented with the top eight people. Go to the whole process, and then so it's kind of up to the fire chief how he kind of determines it. There are points awarded for seniority,
yep.
And then you know, and that's you know, I think that's right. I mean, the fire chief is the fire chief for a reason. So. He's got to put the people that he feels are best in this position. So you got to respect that.
I absolutely agree with that. There's a downside to that and an upside to that. There are people who are going to do really, really well on all technical skills. We take a paramedic, for example. He's an excellent technical paramedic, but he has horrible people skills. So you have someone who can do well on all those testing that you just talked about, but you know he really doesn't care about the job. If the chief has an opportunity to take one out of the top five, or in your case, one out of the top eight, whatever it is, but he has to be, if he skips number one, he should be able to he doesn't have to justify it to anybody, but at least to himself, then why did you go to candidate number three instead of candidate number one? I think that's important. But doing that in the wrong organization or with the wrong chief, and I'm going to use the word nepotism, but I don't mean real family nepotism. A buddy's number eight. He could get the position that is well deserved by numbers two, three, and five. Hopefully, we have chiefs with more integrity than that. But my department does best of five. They can pick any of five. But you have to be careful with that. Do you agree or you disagree?
Yeah. No, I agree. There could be some, you know, some ill effects if, you know, if you skew too far, you know, organizationally it's seen and it can be viewed. If you skew too far from, you know, and if you start bending the rules for certain people and things like that to try to get this or that, you know, it can have an organizational impact. We're fortunate enough that, you know, that hasn't really been the case here. But I've seen it at other organizations, and you can really, you can kind of, you know, I don't want to say it, but taint the waters, if you will, for future promotions doing those sort of things.
Absolutely.
You know, like I said, here, the organization here, we're pretty solid. I feel like we do a good job. You know, there's a pretty clear, you know, as you can tell, just from that process alone, it's pretty arduous. So, you know, the guys who are going to go through all that is are the guys that truly want to get the job. And so that's a good thing.
That's great. I've also met your chief, and I firmly believe that you work for a great organization. You can see it, you can feel it when you're in that building. So you should be proud that you work there. I see things there that I don't see in a lot of places. But, of course, some of the similar problems could exist. You know, based on your policies, it works great today.
Sure.
For example, my department, if I come in on overtime, I can work as a truck boss for the chief that's there. We all get along great, but 10 years down the road, there may be four different battalion chiefs that just don't work well together, so that could create problems. Just like in your organization, your chief, it has a lot of integrity, but the next chief 5 years from now or 10 years from now might say, hey, my cousin is a firefighter there, and I want him to be the battalion chief. You know, so those are things that could – yes, sir.
Chief Pernesti, I just want to know exactly – I want to know how he gets this four-shift system, too. If maybe after this call he can fill us in on exactly how we can pull that off.
Well, I will say that in my organization – it's nothing like what you guys got. It's very. If we change, every time the wind changes, we change the way we do a promotion. We always take the top candidate, but the testing itself is always different. Whether it's a written, you know, a written exam will have these books, or the oral interview will be a whole day or an hour. I've taken so many promotional exams and none of them were the same. And it's kind of sad. But as far as preparation for the future, in my neck of the woods, not just in my department, none of the departments do anything to groom or mentor their candidates. It's just the way it is.
Are you guys there? I kind of just went quiet.
No, I'm here. Okay. I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here. Yeah.
Okay. I just got the sound just went dead on my headset. I feel much better because I hate when it happens. Okay. Now I'd like to move to the federal firefighter. Steve, you still here?
I am.
I know you listen to all the other folks speaking. Tell me what it's like in your organization, because I know there are some similarities, but I'm sure because there are different grades in government employees. Why don't you explain a little bit about how that works in your organization?
Well, my organization, the easiest way to describe this or explain it rather is we are an enterprise. So, yes, I work for my station is the Fort Jackson Fire Department. However, we are the Department of the Army. And when you start looking at the Department of the Army, 70-some-odd garrisons, and under those garrisons are fire departments. Now, garrison is very much like a city manager. So you have a garrison commander that's your city manager. They just – they're military. They wear a green uniform. Under that is, you know, everything that you would expect under a city manager. There's public works. There's fire. There's law enforcement, EMS, depending on what installation you're at. And then it's broken down even further into areas or regions. So we fall under the Installation Management Command, or MCOM. And my installation is a training base, so we are under the training region or the training auspice of MCOM. Having said all that, our firefighters or firefighters within the Department of Defense or the Department of Army, because, of course, you have the Department of the Air Force, you have the Department of Navy and Marines, and they have federal firefighters. And then we have Coast Guard, which is under Homeland Security. They have federal firefighters, DLA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But our firefighters can start off as from a GS3 and go all the way to a GS15. A GS3 is somebody off the street, has no firefighting knowledge whatsoever. They want to enter into the world of firefighting. They're hired, paid as a GS3, and then sent to a fire academy, whether it be the DOD Fire Academy at Goodfellow Air Force Base in Texas, or whether it be through a local academy or a state academy. Then a GS4 is somebody who's graduated from an academy, usually has their firefighter 1. GS5 is somebody who has firefighter 2, usually accompanying hazmat awareness. A 6 is firefighter 2 and hazmat ops. A 7 is firefighter 2, hazmat technician and or EMT, basic. An 8 is usually a company officer, such as myself. A 9 is when you get into supervisory roles. That can be a station chief, a captain, battalion chief, training officer, things like that. And then when you hit 10 and above, you're getting into chief rank, which could be a battalion chief, all the way up to an assistant chief. Deputies are usually between 11 and 12, just depends on the size and complexity of the installation. And your average fire chief's a GS-13. So having said that, in the realm of succession, what our succession is based on is very much learning. If you have the certifications, you can promote. So as a GS-8 company officer, I'm required to have instructor 1, inspector 1, and officer 1. For me to promote to a GS-9 is usually officer 2 and hazmat incident commander. Once you get into your GS-10s and higher, it's when you're starting to look at officer 3. If you're a training officer, it's going to be instructor 3. Going to be in prevention or work in codes, it's going to be in inspector 3, et cetera. The problem with the GS system is they require that you have 52 weeks time and grade at the next lower grade. So for me to go to a 9, I have to be an 8. There are some very few exceptions. Like my current department, we don't have GS-9s. So I can jump from an 8 to a 10. Because we don't have a GS-9. But for me, if I have all of my threes, I have my incident commander stuff, I have blue card, I have all these different things and experience over the 20 years I've been in the fire service, I cannot touch an assistant chief's position because I don't have 52 weeks time and grade at the next lower grade in order to do that. And each installation falls under its own human resources division called CPAC, and they approve job announcements. And currently the Army is trying to streamline that where all the position descriptions are the same because they are different from installation to installation. The size and complexity of the installation will determine, or the size and complexity of the department will determine what your duties are. We have an assistant chief of training, but we have no training officers. But if you go up to Fort Bragg, that has 8 fire stations, looking at 10 fire stations within the next couple of years, they have an assistant chief of training and a handful of training officers. We won't have that here because we're not big enough for it. So the push is that you get all of your driver or all of your certifications for the position that you're going to be in. So if you aspire to be a supervisory firefighter, you need to go out and get your certification. And that is really the only litmus test for your promotion. From there comes your resume and your interview.
So your interview is your testing process, Steve?
Correct. There are no testing processes. And
okay.
Some installations, depending on the chief, might have a process. But there's no hard set.
Let's use you, for example. I know you recently applied for a promotion. Your sole testing person was the interview, your oral interview with whoever your supervisor was. Is that correct?
Yes, it was a panel. That's correct.
It was a panel. Okay. And that's all there is. There's no written test. So it's just you sit down for 45 minutes and you answer questions for a panel of four or five people. Interesting.
That's correct.
Not necessarily
yep.
a bad
now.
Not necessarily a bad way to do it either, because they know you, correct?
Yes, they do. And now that I I know of a chief. His name is Scott DeLay. He's chief of an army installation in Italy. His process is extraordinarily in depth. He has supervisors from the various directorates, law enforcement. He'll have somebody from resource management. He'll have somebody from human resources. All those people will be paneled. And when you get into higher positions, he requires you to write a thesis or to write a white paper on a fire topic. And his entire process has been vetted through the legal department. So it really depends on where you go. Lots of places they'll do a tiered process. So they'll do resume review first, and a board will review all the resumes, and they'll pick their top 10 candidates, and they'll send them to another board of completely different people to do the interviews. And then they'll make a recommendation to the fire chief.
Interesting.
It is.
I like it. Well, we're moving towards closing time here. On all the subjects we talked about tonight, FDIC, Chief Brunicini's passing, promotional things, I'd like each of you to give me just a quick summary of your thoughts for the evening. Chief, we'll start with you. Chief Pronosti.
Well, I know we talked an awful lot about things, but when you're going for a promotional exam, sometimes there's things you can't control. There's one thing you can control, and that is your study and your preparation. And it may not pay off the first time. Hopefully, eventually it will. But the knowledge of reading and studying will most definitely always pay off on the fire ground one way or another for you. So just always remember that. And, you know, as far as Chief Brunicini, again, he was a huge impact. And, again, I certainly advocate that all of us as instructors and authors and writers in the fire service world keep his legacy alive. And thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Great wisdom there. Mike, how about you?
Well, first, I appreciate the message you sent me today to be on the show. It was an honor to be on it, and especially with these great guys that are on here. I say that as far, you know, really the big thing is that what Chief Brunicini taught me was to be humble, to be accessible, and to appreciate everybody for what they bring to the table. And not everybody, even though we all believe sometimes that we're the best person for promotion, not everybody is that right person that's going to fit the vision of the organization. And but we need to all do what Chief Pernesti just said, and that is just keep studying and preparing, and you just never know when your opportunity is going to pop in front of you. I never believed that that career goal I had of being a fire chief was going to happen. And by the way, I didn't mention this earlier, But, you know, the effective date of my promotion was April 1st. And we all know April 1st is April Fool's Day. So who was the fool in that whole deal? But I love all you guys, and I pray that we all have a safe day each and every day.
Thank you, Chief. I appreciate it. Brian, what do you got to say for the end of the show?
You know, as it relates to promotions and things like that, I would say balance. I always tell guys, there's, you know, we talk about the fire service triangle, or fire, you know, fire science, oxygen, fuel, and heat. I'd say as you're going up through promotions and things like that to the officer ranks and chief's ranks, there's three things to keep in mind: training, education, and experience. And one can't outweigh the other, otherwise the triangle falls. But as an officer, that triangle is so strong, you can't fall. So as you go up and you get all your technical rescue and all those things, you know, get some education. And you can have all the education and the training in the world, but if you got 2 years on the job, you're still not the right person. So as you go up and you're looking at yourself and trying to lay out that roadmap of, hey, where do I want to be in 5, 10, 15, and 20 years, think about that fire officer triangle of training, education, and experience, and make sure those three things are in balance. As it relates to Chief Brunicini, yeah, absolute icon in the fire service. He'll be sorely missed, but fortunately for us, his message can live on through our actions and our trainings. So it's up to us now to make sure that, you know, the impact he had on us continues on for another generation.
Thank you, sir. Steve.
Well, as far as progression and promotion goes, for those that are listening, I made a personal mistake in my career. I poured everything I could into education and training, into the sexy stuff, into fighting fire, into strategies and tactics, technical rescue, hazmat, all those wonderful things, because they're sexy and it's something that you want to learn about. You want to learn fire behavior and this cool new forcible entry technique. But where I failed myself is I didn't learn processes and people. So as Brian just said, you need to have a good balance, and you need to pour into management and leadership philosophies. It's not just fight and fire. That's not our sole business anymore. And if you're really going to be a tactician in the fire service, you need to be able to work with people, and you need to be able to understand diversity of mindsets and diversity of personality, and how to deal with that, because it's not cut and dry. As far as Chief Brunicini, the one thing that I will take away from him and always take away from him and try to express upon other people is be a student of this profession. You should constantly be learning, because he was constantly learning. Even when he was retired, he was constantly learning. And if you said something to him or told him a story about something and he could glean something from it, pull out a notebook and write it down. So be a student of this profession, and don't ever forget the most important reason why we're here is to take care of others and learn your job. And if you're spending a tour at the fire station, if you spend an hour of your personal time researching something, reading something, learning something that you didn't know yesterday, you're well on your way to where you want to be, as long as you maintain that attitude and that mindset.
Wow. All of you guys had some insightful things to say. Joe, Brian, Steve, Mike, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I truly appreciate it. I'm only going to add one thing about Alan, and it's more about us than it is about Alan. I put the post up yesterday about Chief Brunicini's passing, and someone wrote, he's sorry he never got to meet him. And I wrote back to him. It was a Facebook post. I really wrote back to him. I posted back to him, much as I hate to admit it. But I said, if you've met any other firefighters, you've met Chief Brunicini, because inside of all of us, we've all learned something from him. Whether
We even know we learned it from him. There are people who don't even know who he is. But something they learned in a class or at a fire, they indirectly learned from Chief Brunicini. And all of you said something similar to this, that we need to keep passing it on, not only just his legacy, the things he shared with us. Joe talked about sitting in the car. I'm an East Coast guy. I grew up in New York. Oh, my God. The thought of sitting in a car is, like, mind-boggling. But it's happening. You know, ICS is happening in New York. It's happening in Connecticut. It's happening in Massachusetts. So Mike brought up that the Wildland has been doing that for years. And, yes, the Wildland is way ahead of us on ICS. But thank you so much for all your insights tonight. Thank you for joining me on the show tonight. And as I always close my show with, we live in the United States of America, and we can blame the Republicans for the economic downturn or blame the Democrats for the economic downturn. When we have a choice, when we go shopping and we can buy something made in America that employs Americans, try to do so. I know you always can't. You can't go out and buy a laptop made in America today. It's almost impossible to buy a baseball cap or a T-shirt, but you can. And if you have a choice, please try to buy American. It will help our economy. It helps pay the taxes. And being a person who makes a living off of other people's taxes, that's all definitely beneficial to me. So when given the opportunity, please make that choice. And all you guys, please stay safe. I enjoyed the conversation. I wish we had more time. I'm looking forward to seeing all of you at FDIC because I know you're all going to be there. And let's try to spend some time together. Maybe after the Monday morning class, we can all go out to lunch together. You know, that we're all teaching all right. Monday morning. You know, someday I'm going to sit in one of your classes, guys. Again, you guys stay safe. And thank you. Until the next time. And don't forget, Honeywell and DuPont sponsoring the FDIC scholarship program. Good night, gentlemen, and please stay safe.
Hey, Jeffy. Hey, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Jim. Just imagine what it's like for me. I'm not instructing, but I got all my brothers teaching first thing Monday morning. Who do I pick to go to?
Hey, here's the deal. You should be extremely proud of yourself. You are a chief of department. It's something that I'll never aspire to. So do not feel disappointed about not teaching at FDIC. You'll get there eventually. I promise you that. I've sat and listened to you. You just got to write your proposal the right way. And don't give up, just like we talked about promotions.
I am not going to give up. I do not feel a sense of failure by not being selected. I feel a new challenge every time to do better. See, that's
awesome.
My always been my philosophy is it's a new challenge to do better. But now I have to decide who I go sit with because my brothers are all teaching.
You've seen me speak, right?
Just a little short spot. So I
well then you have to come to my class.
All right, brother. Love you.
It's the new and improved version. Michael, you stay safe, and you keep the boys and girls safe in your department.
You bet, your brother. Love you.
Ditto.